Well, if we're going to be talking about great quarterbacks, we might as well bring a great quarterback on to help us break it down and talk about it. That's why we're very pleased to be joined by Troy Aikman of the NFL and Fox. Troy, thanks so much for doing this. You're on with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch. Good to talk to you.
Hey, fellas. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I have to admit, I was stunned when I found out that Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady hadn't faced each other. I just assumed that they were both so good and their teams were so good that they would have faced each other at some point down the road. I don't want to get ahead of myself, though, and I want to talk about the Falcons and the Packers to begin with. And, you know, one of the stats that really stood out to me after the Falcons win, looking at the number of drives, Troy, they had this year where they started within inside their own 10-yard line and scored 11, went on to score touchdowns 11 times, which is a pretty decent number in this NFL. What is it about Matt Ryan's development as a quarterback that has kind of turned him into that guy, that game manager?
Well, I don't really like the term game manager. I think it carries a bit of a negative connotation, and even if you were using it, I don't know that I would apply it to Matt mm-hmm. Ryan. But I think that, you know, I thought that when Matt came into the league as a rookie, I'd seen him play very little in college. I knew what his numbers were when he first got into the league and was starting, and we had no Atlanta Falcons games, you know, coming up on our schedule. It didn't look like we were going to have them throughout the year. So I had the guy who gets my films for me each week. I said, hey, could you happen to put on, you know, a game of Atlanta's, one of their recent games. I'd like to watch this Matt Ryan and see how he is. And I watched about five throws, and I turned it off and saw all that I really needed to see. I thought the guy was terrific from day one. Thought he was very well coached. It was apparent watching him as a young player coming out of Boston College. And so then, you know, he got to Atlanta. He's had a remarkable career. I think the only thing that's keeping him from being talked about, even though this year, I mean, he's had an MVP-type season, but being mentioned when, you know, where it just rolls off the tongue when you say who are the best quarterbacks in the game is bringing home a championship and doing it, you know, in January. And so he certainly has had some success in the postseason, but he's also had some disappointments where they haven't been able to take advantage of some of the opportunities that they've had. But one, he's got, as all of us who had success in this league, we've got good players around us, and he certainly does, and he's got arguably the best receiver in football, and they run the football very well, and even though he's had different offensive coordinators over the years, I thought Cutter did a nice job with him in the offense, and then with Kyle Shanahan coming in, I've been very impressed with him over the years. You know, obviously his father, one of the great offensive minds in the history of this game. And then when Kyle was with the Houston Texans, I thought he did a really nice job, as well as when he was in Washington. And he's carried that on with the balance and some of the offensive philosophy that you just don't see as much of in today's game, with the balance and some of the play action stuff and then taking the shots down the field. And Matt's the perfect guy to execute all that. He's extremely smart. He's accurate. He's tough. He wants to be great. He puts the time in. I think that, you know, when you mentioned the four quarterbacks that are left standing, if you will, and all of those guys are the same. They're different kinds of players, of course, in their style. But I think when you look at them as leaders, their commitment to being great, the amount of time they put in and their preparation, I think you're basically talking about the same guy. They all do those things in order to achieve the success they have in this league.
Troy, you and Joe Buck called just that exceptional game between the Packers and the Cowboys. You guys have the Falcons and Packers on Fox this Sunday at 3 p.m. I want to ask you a question about Aaron Rodgers. And this is interesting to me, Troy. I know you are someone who follows all sports, and you're someone who watches not just football. In basketball, when shooters get into rhythms, you know, they start calling like long range shooters rhythm shooters, and guys will talk about how they feel. They walk on the court and they can't miss. What we've seen with Aaron Rodgers over whatever it is, the last 7 to 8 weeks, it just feels like this is a quarterback playing with significant momentum. Is there such a thing at the quarterback position, Troy, where understanding that it's a team game, you can sort of play off the momentum from previous weeks? Because Rodgers' play over the last 8 weeks is it's almost inconceivable at this point.
Well, I would agree, and I think that what's more remarkable about his play, I felt that Sunday in particular, that he essentially took over the game himself. I mean, they were shorthanded on defense. There was really, at least from my perspective, there was not a lot of confidence that Green Bay's defense was going to be able to slow down Dallas. And maybe the play of the game in that game was when Nick Perry batted down the third down pass that forced the Cowboys to then kick the field goal and tie the game up, because it one of those type plays was required because of the condition of their defense. And then on the offensive side, I thought Dallas, you know, was doing a good job of being physical with their receivers. They started bringing some pressures. They were getting to Aaron a little bit. And so every throw was contested, and we saw that time after time. And it was his ability to put the ball where, you know, the only place you could put it to catch the football or to give his guy an opportunity to make a play. And then, of course, the third and 20. You know, I don't want to say he's the only guy in this league that can make that throw, but there may be one or two other guys. And to do it with the game on the line and everything that was, you know, at stake, I think is even more impressive. So I like that you brought up the basketball analogy as far as the shooter goes, because just yesterday in talking about the game, I said, you know, you see LeBron James take over a game. You see Kobe Bryant, and you see those types of guys, but in football, you really don't. I mean, even when a great running back is having his way in the second half or the fourth quarter, I mean, there's an offensive line that's involved and a lot of other things. But I thought we witnessed that on Sunday. And I know in visiting with Aaron prior to the game, not just this week, but over the last couple of months, he's just got a whole different demeanor than he's had really in the year and a half prior to that. Earlier in the season, we saw it. His body language and the way he was, you know, on the field, it didn't suggest that he was an overly confident quarterback, and the team was struggling. And now when you talk to him and you watch him, he goes out there and he certainly plays at a high level. And when you get into that rhythm as a quarterback and you're playing with that kind of confidence, first of all, you're seeing what the defense is doing. You're not confused by anything. And then you have a belief that regardless of whatever the defense does or whoever they have guarding this particular guy, that I've always thought that a great throw beats great coverage. And when you're throwing the ball with such confidence, you have a belief that you can put the ball where you have to put it. So it doesn't matter how good the coverage is. And that's what we've seen of him. And it's been a pleasure to watch him play, and he's doing it as well as anybody that's ever played the position in the history of our game.
Troy, you are truly one of the few people on earth who can actually answer this with some clarity and some experience. And that is there a difference in terms of a legacy perspective, winning two Super Bowls versus winning one? Because Aaron Rodgers would be in that potential position. And obviously we have two other quarterbacks out of this quartet in Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger who have each won more than two Super Bowls. You're someone obviously who won multiple Super Bowls. Do we as a general rule, do we look at a quarterback who's won two differently than a quarterback who's won only one?
Well, it's a fair question. I'd have to think that it probably depends on the quarterbacks that are being compared. I think there are some who have won Super Bowls, one Super Bowl, and compared with someone who never has won a Super Bowl, and in a lot of people's eyes, they'd say that quarterback doesn't measure up. So I think there's a lot more to it, but I understand the point, and I would say that yes, if someone has, you know, winning one is hard enough. I've always been asked, how come it's so hard for teams to win back-to-back Super Bowls? And they say, well, because just doing it once is hard to do, and to try to do it all over again in consecutive seasons is, you know, even tougher, of course. So there's no doubt that you do. I know going back, my own experience was when we won our first Super Bowl in 1992, and then we come back in 93, and we're going to the Super Bowl. And Brad Cham, the radio voice of the Dallas Cowboys, said to me the week of the Super Bowl, said, hey, this is a game that cements, you know, your induction into the Hall of Fame. And I don't know that I necessarily agreed with that. I think it probably took the third for me for that to happen. But outside of Jim Plunkett and Aaron Rodgers, and you know, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame anyway. But I do think that it certainly gives you a better stake to the claim of what your legacy is going to be, if you will. So there's no doubt that multiple Super Bowls is, there's not a lot of guys that are capable of saying that, and to be amongst those is certainly a real privilege.
You know, Troy, we know that Le'Veon Bell has been on a real roll. I mean, he's averaged like 147 yards in his last eight games. We also saw when Houston played New England that they were able to get some pressure up the middle on Tom Brady. The Steelers defense, or the Steelers line, they had 30 sacks in the second half of this year. So I'm going to ask you, what's going to be more important for the Steelers to have success against a team that they haven't always had success against? Le'Veon Bell goes off, or they get some pressure on Tom Brady? What to you is the most important aspect?
Well, I think that in addition to the pressure, what Houston, being able to get the takeaways, was certainly a big part of that for an offense that just simply doesn't give the ball away. And, they gave then Houston some opportunity. So pressure in and of itself, I've seen Tom play enough times over the years when he's had pressure. Mm-hmm. And he does an excellent job of avoiding the sacks and really avoiding the negative plays and just knowing that if he hangs in there, then eventually the levee's going to break and he's going to have some success. And so, but having said that, I love Le'Veon Bell. We've had Pittsburgh games over the years. We had two of their games this season. He's as incredible a back as I've seen. And his ability to run with the football, but then also the things that he's able to do within the passing game is pretty incredible. I heard something last week, not to digress elsewhere, but I heard something last week, and it amazed me, quite honestly, that they said the first playoff game for the Steelers this year, the wild card game, was that was the first time that Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Le'Veon Bell had all three played
in
a postseason game together. And I thought, wow, I'm going to have to check that and verify that. But that's, I thought, wow, how crazy is that for three really great players that have been in the league for a little while? But I think it's going to be a heck of a matchup. But I would say disrupting Brady and having success on the defensive side of the ball will be of greater value to the Steelers than Le'Veon Bell, as great as he is and as much as he can impact the game, would be on the offensive side.
And people on the station know, obviously, I cover sports media for Sports Illustrated in the States, and I will say, as we have Troy on, I've talked to him many times, he's really honestly one of the most straight shooters that I deal with, and I will say publicly, even when he's on here, that I always appreciate that. Troy, you are based in Dallas, obviously. You have a long and historic connection to the Dallas Cowboys. One of the off-season stories of this year will be what happens with Tony Romo, and what do you expect will be the case as we head forward? It seems rather clear that he's going to be traded, and then the question will be, obviously, what team would be willing to part with draft picks or young players to get him?
Yeah, it's certainly a worthy discussion, and I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that he will be traded. It's my understanding that if a trade takes place, the Cowboys then have to absorb whatever's left on that guaranteed signing bonus, and then the team, of course, would have to absorb this contract. So I don't know that he'll necessarily be traded. Maybe he will be. There's a possibility that he could be released. There's been some discussion, because then if he's released, they can spread the hit on that cap over a 2-year period. Right. So, what happens there if he's not with the Cowboys? I'm not certain. But there's been some discussion that maybe Tony doesn't want to go anywhere. Maybe he wants to stay in Dallas, which I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine, for a guy that's as competitive as he is, that he would want to go through an entire offseason and the OTAs and training camp and another season as the backup, just waiting around in case something happened to Dak where he could get his opportunity again. But let's just say that were the case. He's due to make 20-whatever million dollars next year. And there's no way possible that you can have a starting quarterback making $500,000 as a fourth-round pick and then the backup making $20 million. So even if Romo said, okay, well, I'll take a pay cut, we'll renegotiate this, I'll take a pay cut, let's say he takes $5 million, which would be obviously a substantial, reduction in salary, he's still making $4.5 million more than the starter. And right. So I just don't see a scenario where you can keep the chemistry and all that this team really represented this year. It was a close-knit group, and that's hard to get. And I don't know that you can carry that forward, you know, if you had a backup that was making that much more than the starting quarterback who led the team to the number one seed and 13 wins. So my guess is that Romo will be gone. And then it's a question of, okay, well, where exactly where he land? He's talked about, apparently, it was reported anyway this past weekend, that Denver would be his first choice. That would probably be my first choice, too, if I was him, because you get a great defense, you got a team that is capable of winning it all. There's no doubt that he's going to want to go somewhere where they can contend, and I don't think it makes sense for any team to go after him that can't contend.
Troy, listen, we got to scooter up against the clock here. We've got to move for our network. So, hey, man, appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
You got it, Gary.